We're coming in hot with inspiring guests, witty banter, and colorful commentary for today's veterans and military community. This is the Tango Alpha Lima Podcast.
They call me crazy because I'm facing all my giants. They try to scare me into thinking I can fight it. They tell me I should never even think of trying. But that's just me, I'm gonna live out in defiance.
Alphas, alphas, and aspiring alphas, welcome back to the Tango Alpha Lima Experience. This is episode, guess what, 153. That is not a magical number, but I thought I'd share it with you just because it's informative. It is April. It means your taxes are almost due. Get them done or get an extension. Be a one of those people that puts things off. Procrastinator, if you will. All right. Who does the taxes in your house there, Gudemuth?
Oh, not me.
You're one big deduction.
I have one. That is my whole purpose, is to be a deduction. I was talking to my friend recently who was having trouble. They had got a bunch of money, but it wasn't money that they were going, that they were actually received. It just, they were used as a funnel, essentially, a tax shelter. And I said, you better get a good accountant. And they said, you know what? I think I'm just going to learn this lesson the hard way. No. My husband does it.
That's an expensive lesson.
Going to jail. Why not? I'm just here to learn my lessons.
All right. Well, I think today, here's what's happening today. Never ever put together podcast stories when you're hungry, as I'm now watching Holly scarf down a banana on the screen you cannot see. Yes, our little super producer is over there just enjoying when we can't eat. All right, so today I think the lesson is all of the stories except the interview are about consumption of caloric intake. And this first one, I think Ashley's going to teach us a little history.
All right, let's learn a little bit. Did you know that Coca-Cola was the result of a wounded soldier trying to ease his own pain, according to military.com? Fighting in the Civil War didn't end when General Robert E. Lee surrendered the Army of Northern Virginia on April 9th, 1865. A week later, Jeff's face, yeah. A week later, Union troops that hadn't heard the news set out to destroy the city of Columbus, Georgia. Confederate defenders positioned themselves across the Chattahoochee River, forcing Union troops to cross one of two bridges to attack. When Union cavalry assaulted the upper bridge, a Confederate officer named Lieutenant Colonel John Pemberton took a saber slash to the chest. When the war ended, he became addicted to the morphine used to ease the pain. In trying to cure his addiction, he created not only a $260 billion business, but an entire global industry. I think it only took 2 weeks, right? Pemberton had been a doctor since the age of 19 and was a skilled chemist with a drugstore in Columbus. He began creating patent medicines after the war and started selling his first popular medicine, Pemberton's French Wine Coca, a derivative of a celebrated European beverage of wine and cocaine. Okay. Celebrated European beverages. Where are you going? I'm going to have some cheese. Can I have some brie? And just give me one of those celebrated European beverages.
Extra cocaine, please.
Apparently it was called Vin Mariani. It was a potent mix of caffeinated cola nuts and Damiana, a flower used to make early versions of margarita cocktails. Wow. The active ingredient, however, was still cocaine mixed with wine. Don't forget that, the extra cocaine. As one might imagine, it was marketed as a remedy for almost any ailment. Yeah, I bet you could fix it real fast, which technically worked. By today's standards, it sounds like he was trying to cure an expensive morphine addiction with a cheap cocaine addiction, but that's really not the case. Cocaine was widely regarded as a cure for morphine addicts. Pemberton wasn't the only wounded Confederate veteran addicted to morphine. There are many of them. To top it all off, the people of the rapidly changing South were known for suffering from fatigue, headaches, anxiety, and depression, later called neurasthenia by doctors after the war. Pemberton was looking for a cure-all to help veterans and civilians alike. French wine coca seemed to do the trick. And it was, of course, really popular. He soon moved his operation to Atlanta, where it sold even more. Everything was going smoothly until 1886, when alcohol was outlawed in Fulton County. He kept selling the French wine coca elsewhere, but in Atlanta, he needed to formulate. I mean, he could have just taken out the wine altogether and just straight with the cocaine. So they got rid of wine, but they said you can have your cocaine. Great. Well done, Fulton County. And trying to make a non-alcoholic version of his medicine in a brass kettle in his backyard, that's the most Georgia sentence I've ever heard, he experimented with different ingredients. The final recipe, called Seven Times Flavoring, is still a trade secret. While at a pharmacy, he mixed the syrup with carbonated water and knew he'd found the magic. He called it Coca-Cola because he liked the alliteration. His new beverage, marketed as the temperance drink, still contained the coca leaves and cola nuts, but used the sugar syrup instead of wine. He sold it at the soda fountains in and around pharmacies, still selling it as a cure for nervous affections. Although he found interested investors, he didn't really see Coca-Cola's potential and gradually sold off his own interest in the company. The statue of John Pemberton outside of Coca-Cola headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia. Oh, that must be a picture supposed to be there. It's the way the sentence just ends.
Oh, Pemberton, the Jeff Daly died. Copy paste.
Oh, it's all right. Pemberton died in August 1888, but Coca-Cola lived on. It wasn't long before Atlanta businessman and former druggist Ajah Griggs Candler controlled the entire enterprise. Candler's operation began bottling the beverages, then sold licensing rights for others to bottle Coca-Cola throughout the country. Aggressive marketing led to an explosion in popularity. The Coca-Cola company claims the soda never contained actual cocaine. Guys, don't tell the cops. But fact checkers have found evidence the recipe contained cocaine until the turn of the 20th century. It still uses coca leaves in the recipe, but the cocaine has been removed from its coca extract by the New Jersey-based company Stapen. So wait a minute. Okay, hang on. Let me finish. The Coca-Cola company sells an estimated 1.9 billion drinks every day, all without wine, cocaine, or any other intoxicating substance. Well, you know, caffeine. But so they have to remove the cocaine in New Jersey.
Who's using that removed cocaine?
Where's it going? Come on, guys. Taxes are already super high in New Jersey. If you're offloading it by this cocaine operation, that's not fair. Lower the property taxes.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. That's where you moved from.
Yeah, I know. Right, so, I know they're not dumping that in the river.
So Pemberton, he sold off his stake. I'm assuming he didn't die a super wealthy man, but they get to walk by him on their way to work every day at Coca-Cola headquarters. That's kind of...
And they get to be like, that's the guy that gave up all of this money.
He screwed up.
And also, it says that he marketed it as the temperance drink. It still had cocaine in it, and they were using it at soda fountains, which, I don't know, maybe if they are primarily used in the way that they are now, a lot of little kids hopped up on cocaine. So I don't know how we were, like, in this day and age, when we're like, kids are so hyperactive, it's because of the sugar. Well, in the 1800s, they were like, kids are friggin' running all over the place. My kid just painted the walls. Why does he have so much energy? He just went down and had some of that temperance drink.
And, you know, they talk about this stuff in medicine all the time. They say that aspirin wouldn't get approved today and things like that. That is true.
Is it true?
Yes.
Aspirin comes from a tree, right? Tree bark?
Cocaine comes from a leaf.
Well,
the coca.
Talk leaf. To New Jersey.
So it's really believable to me that it was thought of as just a medicine, and it probably does have some medicinal purposes. It's just that humans, also, being who we are, find recreational uses for anything, thus ruining it for everybody. Now
ruined it. See that? You're right.
Ruined now it. I can't ever have, I'm trying to find, I can't have Pemberton's French wine coca. I'll never be able to have that now. Unless I want to cross the street and go to the other side of the law, which I don't want to do.
No. You know, people are recreating it too.
Oh, we're probably
some
helping.
Bottles probably still exist. We're probably, I know, helping. We're marketing for them, right?
There's probably some post. Someone's gonna have a fundraiser. Moonshine. Come on down, get some Pemberton's.
My dad makes a lot of moonshine. Oh, I'm surprised he's not dead.
Christmas list. All right. You know who we have who probably would not get involved in this? Our guest today.
Yeah, he's a good egg. Our
guest today is Herb Thompson, who served 20 years in the U.S. Army, was named U.S. Army Drill Sergeant of the Year in 2008, and retired in March 2019 as a Special Forces Green Beret Team Sergeant in the 5th Special Forces Group. Herb is currently a program manager for a veteran program. He's a program manager for veteran programs at a large tech company and award-winning author of the best-selling book, The Transition Method Mission. Sorry. Oh, what's wrong with me today? The Transition Mission. It even rhymes. I should love that. A Green Beret's approach to transition from military service. We'll be back to talk about drill sergeants and military transition with Herb right after the break.
By pulling out your cell phone and simply typing www.legion.org/action, you have at your fingertips our legislative priorities. With one press of a button, you can let your congressmen and your senators know what the American Legion wants to pass, and you can do it every single day. The power is in our hands. You just have to take the opportunity to use it.
Welcome back, Alphas. We have a special guest. We have a Green Beret, right? I thought he was a Navy SEAL for a second because he wrote a book, and they all write books on, on everything. Cleaning your toilet the Navy SEAL way. They're experts on everything. It's just really weird. But you're a Green Beret and Marine Corps, I almost said drill instructor, sorry. Drill Sergeant of the Year. Wow. You've had quite the career, huh?
Yeah, I've had an interesting career. It was part of my problem when I left the Army, though, was I had two goals in life: be a drill sergeant and earn my Green Beret. And then it was like, what do I do now? I was fortunate enough to put in the work to make those two things happen.
Well, welcome to the Tango Alpha Lima experience. I'm not sure if we were one of your goals, but if we were, sir, you've made it.
You've made it.
Check my block.
And also, if one of your goals was to be asked the first question by Instagram celebrity Ashley Gudermuth, you are about to experience that as well, Ashley.
Awesome.
Brace yourself. Herb, okay, Drill Sergeant of the Year, Green Beret. First thing that I think of, do you still have your drill sergeant voice?
Yes, I do. I still can yell. I tend not to, though my teenagers may disagree from time to time.
What makes the drill sergeant of the year, or just what makes a good drill sergeant?
Really investing and caring about training people. We always joke, yeah, we've been through it. People have seen it. Like, hey, it's all about yelling. There's yelling. How do you get a message across to a lot of people? You have to raise your voice, but it's really about inculcating the Army values, in my case, and showing them how to be a soldier, the task, the skills, training people. So for me, it was one of the most rewarding things I could have ever asked for. I loved it. You saw an almost immediate transformation in a short period of time. I can't think of anything else that's even close to it. In a few weeks, you see people transform from almost into totally different people. And it's just awesome.
Wow, that's so cool.
Well, I would say, having only been on the other side of it, I can see how caring would get you the award, because a couple of mine, they didn't care. No, I'd love to meet one of them in particular in real life, but that's another thing, because you can't do that in boot camp. Sadistic. We called him Skeletor because he was evil. He actually violated the law, but we can talk about that after the show. So you've done the drill sergeant. God, it's really hard to say for a Marine.
It's different.
Drill instructor. You didn't serve with anybody you yelled at, did you?
I did not, though. Shortly after that, I was grading. They selected some drill sergeants to go down and grade the national JROTC Drill and Ceremony Championships in Florida. I was one of the people going down, and I was walking through, and there's maybe 20 some thousand high schoolers. And I hear this little voice, Drill Sergeant Thompson, Drill Sergeant Thompson. I was like, what the heck? And it was one of my trainees who had came to basic training during their break between summer and senior year of high school. So that's the only one I've ran into. I've had others reach out, but that's the only one like real life kind of ran into.
Like reach out online or?
Yeah.
Very cool. I have no desire for that at whatsoever. So we're going to jump into this book. So this book, the accolades I've been reading are, you know, pretty amazing. I went over to Amazon.com. You can get it at Amazon.com for $2.99 on Kindle, or get a physical paperback for $4.99. If you are transitioning, this is the de facto book that you have to have. So how was your transition without having a book like this?
I will say fairly easy. All of us struggle, right? There's certain days of struggle. I started very early, about 2 years out. Someone had sat me down and said, hey, what are you going to do when you retire? Because I was going to hit my 20. And I was like, oh, crap, I don't know. I know I don't want to be a statistic, and I know there's nothing to go home to. Other than that, I don't know. I'll get a college degree, and then we'll see what happens. So I just started talking to people. I treated it like a mission. I was going to deploy, but I was going to deploy in the United States. So I know how to deploy. I know how to learn a operating environment, language, cultural things as such. So that's what I started doing. So I just started talking to people, gaining my own intel, if you will, talking with about 2,000 people as I was getting out. I just wanted more information. But what I saw is talking with that, and then after, you know, retiring, so many people don't start, or either on their own choosing, or their, you know, their own kind of something happens to them. They get hurt or something. They have to, you know, do a quick transition, and they're behind the power curve. And there was one Army soldier in particular. I was doing networking calls, helping mentor, and she said, hey, I'm effing lost. And she was on her transition leave, and I was like, oh, crap. So I literally was driving home from the spine surgeon, having a call with her. And then when I got home, I started typing, and that was Friday at about 6 p.m. and probably Sunday night by about 10 p.m., you know, 75% of the book or so was done. Because I was like, I want to help more brothers and sisters.
So your experience actually helping someone just translated right into the book.
Yeah, it did. And just all that, hey, this is all the knowledge I gained that helped me go through. This was kind of my approach to go through it. For me, it was also my safety area. I was going through some tough personal stuff, you know, getting a divorce and stuff. And my safe space was working on my transition and figuring this out. So it really gave me something to focus on, and like really a purpose, if you will, as I was hanging the uniform up.
And a noble purpose it is. Ashley, have a follow-up on the book?
Yeah, I your book has fantastic reviews. I love some of the pictures where people have talked about reading it. They're holding Bang energy drinks while while checking it out, which I think is awesome. Do you see people going through phases when they transition out of the military? You know how when something bad happens, we used to say you go through denial, acceptance. Are there certain phases that people typically experience when they transition out?
No, that's a great question. I definitely think so. They go through almost similar to grieving. It's almost similar to grieving, right? The process of grieving is at first you have to admit it's going to happen. And there's a lot of, and I think it depends too, right? It matters. Everyone, I don't care if you served a day. And I say that for veterans, military spouses, you serve. But there's a difference. You become institutionalized the more you're there. So if you serve 20, 25, 30 years, your whole way of life is that, where if you just spent a couple of years, it's not as changed as much. And there's pros and cons on each side. But there's definitely a process of accepting it. And for me, the biggest thing, everyone says, thank you for your service. And somewhere along the way, I believe a lot of us think that means, thank you for your service, here's your job, or here's your next career. And it's not that. We have to go find it. And for me, once we realize, oh, we have to go apply ourselves just as hungry and eager as we were when we joined, the military is very good at giving us a purpose, giving us a team, and giving us our identity. And we get it from day one. And then throughout our career, we get it. And I say the same thing for military spouses in that sense. Then it goes away. So once we identify we have to hey, I got to find these. And maybe it's through a great local organization at the local VFW post, right? Or the local American Legion. Hey, what do you know?
There's a lot. Oh, you sent me in a tailspin there.
I know. I just wanted to see your faces. I was like, I'm going to say someone else. But really, like any civic organization, there it comes from all different, you know, walks of life. But really, groups like the American Legion, y'all, is just awesome and finding that. But yeah, there's a process. But I think the first thing is acceptance of like, hey, this is, I'm going through this. Let me go through it, and then can kind of continue on. It's ongoing. It's always a part of us. It doesn't leave us. It's always, in many cases, some of the most important parts of us are that we served and how we served and where we served. That doesn't go away.
Yeah, I know people that have been out 20 years and I don't think they've accepted it yet. They act like they're still in. They refer to themselves as their rank. And I'm like, you're awful old for a sergeant. You might want to
90-year-old sergeant. All right.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to do that. And some of what you're talking about, I boil it down sometimes to even basics. People don't, and you see, you can tell the new ones because they still wear things they bought in the exchange. They don't know what to wear every day. Yeah. They have to remember and prepare food for themselves. It's a tough transition, and Ash is going to be going through it. I don't know when is he retiring?
Well, we're up and moving again, so it's not going to be another like four more years before he's out. My husband's done 31 years, and I've been with him for all of it. No, he's older than I am, but for a good 10 years of it. But I also like just all the things you're saying. My grandfather was in the Marines. My dad was in the Army. My husband's in the Air Force. My kid's at the Naval Academy. I am completely surrounded. I've lived on bases for years. I only basically shop at the commissary and the exchange. My husband only wears green socks. You know, when do you stop talking acronyms? I tried to talk to my other comedian friends and I'll be like, when a general does this, and they're like, what is a general? You weirdo. And so I totally get it. It becomes your entire life. And the thought of it ending absolutely sends us into a spiral. It sends us into, what are we going to do next? What's the next purpose? Where do we go?
It definitely does. And I think the biggest part is we don't need to do it alone. Everyone thinks it's just them, right? No, everyone, whether they've been or not, is going through it at some shape or level as they're going through that transition. So don't do it alone. Like we talk with people about it. There's so many resources. American Legion's great. So many other ones out there that, you know, there's no shortage of resources for veterans. We're very spoiled. But the first thing that has to happen is I need help. Yeah. Or, hey, let me take this assistance. They'll enable me to, you know, future success. And that's something we all struggle with, right? Because we're all tough. We're all like, oh, no, we can't show weakness. And part of that's bred from our military career. If we showed weakness or we showed we weren't tough, you kind of get ostracized. You have to be tough and you have to show it. Or if you're home, hey, I'm taking care of the home, you know, go do business. You have to put on that kind of facade, whether it's real or not. And then, you know, think everyone else is not scared. Well, everyone's scared. It's just we're thinking that.
I let all that go. I don't pretend I'm tough at all. Let them underestimate me. I'm just like, yeah. I also quit using the 24-hour clock. I felt that was important, but only at my posts. You see people sign in, they're like 1700 arrival. I'm like, no, you came at 5 o'clock. Let's just say what it is. You're in America now. You're going to use metrics? Like,
yeah, it's those little things though, right? Like we joke about them, but it is like, hey, if you're still wearing your BCGs, right? Or all you wear is combat boots. I always say those are the people that are going to transition, or the people that their back of their car is their, you know, their records, all their awards, all their medals, all the deployments. It's going to be a tougher transition because it's a big mental jump to go, I'm not that person anymore. It's a part of who I am, but it's not who I am.
Right. Yeah. It feels like a club is kicking you out. And you don't like at some point they're going to like, you're either going to die or they're going to kick you out. There's no other way.
Right. Is it in the club we were so proud to be a part of and to join and be accepted into, and then once you're out the gate, there's no going back. You know, you can't go back.
Yeah.
And they open the door. So it's tough.
Yeah. It kind of got me thinking, like, mine was so different. I ran out of there. I packed 3 days before. I had everything in my C bag. And then when I got home, I threw that somewhere, and I don't know where it is to this day. And I have more military stuff now because of being in the Legion and having to be visible like that, that I didn't leave with a t-shirt that I would wear. I didn't leave with any of it. But it is a weird feeling when you do leave the gate, you no longer have access, right? So you're literally going into a new world, because that base is no longer your home. You're actually not welcome. You're like,
yeah,
you're trespassing now. And I kind of felt the same way when I left college. You know, I can't swipe and enter the buildings that I've been in for 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, there's a big psychological thing. So I'm wondering, in your book that I haven't read yet, is it a step-by-step kind of practical, or is there some mindset things that you go into as well?
Yes.
Do we hear your drill sergeant voice in the text?
You'll hear my voice, not my drill sergeant voice, just my voice. But yeah, a little bit of step-by-step of what you can do. But you kind of hit on it. Everyone's transition's unique. There's a lot of similarities, but everyone's unique. You've got your own set of circumstances, your own problems, if you will, to go with. And some of them have family, some don't. Some are younger, some are older. There's a lot of difference there. So it's really just a starting point for everyone to go, okay, here's how I can approach my transition. And I think going way back to Ashley's question earlier of what's the process, I think one of the things too is once we realize we can get outside of that veteran community, there's a whole this other world out there that for some of us, we've been insulated from. We are not the only ones that go through transition. Just this weekend, I talked with a retiring minister, a retiring CIA agent, and a high schooler. All of them going through the same, you know, anxiety, if you will, because it's a huge life change. Now, different perspective for all of them, but all of them are going through, and there's, you know, a couple hundred thousand veterans transition every year. There's a lot of people out there going through it. So it's not, you're not alone as long as you reach out and talk with folks.
Right. I wasn't alone. I think my biggest problem with the transition was I didn't self-identify. Nobody in college knew. I went to a really little bougie liberal arts school. So they all knew I was older, but they didn't know why for a while. It eventually I got outed eventually, but I did the cold turkey. That's over. This has started, and cross the two shall not meet, except for the GI Bill. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, you got to leverage that. But it's interesting. You said that, right? Like you hit who you were, right? And then eventually probably came out down the road. A lot of people do that. They hide, especially based on the environment. Certain colleges, or most colleges these days, it isn't necessarily the coolest thing to do, go, hey, I'm a veteran, right? And and do that. So there is, and same with certain companies. Or if you're like, I've had some people that serve that are friends with me, that like they're girls, so they could ask, hey, did you wear camo? Did you have to get dirty? And they're like, what that kind of question is that? Would you ask the guy who served also? Like, right. It's just weird, right? So a lot of people don't self-identify. Now, I think oftentimes if you see someone like me or someone similar, you're like, okay, that could be a veteran. But not all veterans look the same. We're different. We're just a cross segment of American society. So oftentimes we don't identify ourselves, and no one knows it, because the assumption is, you know, if you look a certain way, you're probably a veteran. If you don't, you're not. But really, we look all different.
Right. We do. Ashley, what do you got for the drill sergeant?
I would like to know, you have all this variety of experiences. How do you think the military could better prepare people for transition? What are they doing right or wrong?
Yeah, I think it's way better than it used to be. Every year it gets better. If that's only because, you know, Congress says you will do this for whatever reason, it is. And it's tough, right? The military is there to go win our nation's wars. They have a mission. So it is tough on commands when you look down to a micro level of, hey, we got to help this person go get another job. Where else does that? There's not to, you know, almost nowhere. But it's kind of what we owe the American people is we took care of your son and daughter for insert number of years. We're going to get them back to you. We're going to help them along the way. So they're making strides. SkillBridge program is one of them, where in your last 6 months of transitioning, you know, out of the active duty, you can, if your command approves, you can go learn a new skill or get on the job training or attend a training course, something like that. If it's approved, that's great. All these different criteria, you know, Jeff said the GI Bill, that's still there from the VA, like underutilized. So many over, I believe 50% of people don't even touch their GI Bill. That's free. It's free money to go.
That's a huge statistic.
Yeah, it's huge, but go to college at night, go do something, use it for a trade. Yeah. It doesn't have to be college. You can use it for different skill sets. The military is doing that. I still believe it's different in the military. Even in my community, when I was in special forces, you come in the team room. Once you say, hey, I'm going to leave, you're kind of dead to us, right? Because we have a mission to focus on. We're getting ready to deploy. Mm-hmm. We're focusing on being the best warrior, operator, whatever you want to call us, we could be. And if you're not down with that, we don't got time for you. So there's slowly, it's going to be a generational thing, though. I believe, you know, leaders, they're there to make their unit the best, and they come and go after a couple of years. There's not a whole lot of incentive for them to help Ashley, Jeff, Herb. Hey, we know you served a few years. Let's help you on your way out. Other than just being good people, and I believe it's the best recruiting tool out there, is to have people that talk good about their service. If we come in here and just trash serving, no one's going to want to serve. But if all three of us or whoever, anyone talks about their service, their connection with military in a positive way, that helps with recruiting. But that's a very big strategic picture that most people focus on the short term.
Yeah, 100%. That's why you lose the legacy people, because why would you stay in? Why would you encourage your kids to stay in if you were treated terribly, especially on your way out, which is going to be one of the last things you remember? There's you bringing up the special forces guys being like, all right, well, you're out. You don't have any skin in the game. We're like, goodbye. It's been nice knowing you. There's a saying on submarines where until you have your dolphins, until you're qualified to be on a submarine, they call you an oxygen thief. And I love that. I'm just like, you are useless. In fact, you are actually actively hurting us. So learn quick.
Herb, you brought up something and it created something rare in me, which is an opinion. Holly's going to roll her eyes heavily. I honestly don't think commanders should have, or the command that you're serving in, should have any input into your transition. It's counterintuitive to their goal of retention. I mean, how many times they try to talk people into re-enlisting when they've said, I'm getting out? You gotta go talk to your company gunny, go talk to your first sergeant, go talk to the sergeant major. They're all trying to get you to stay. That's their mission. And then we want those people who you've disappointed, pissed off, and everything else to help you transition. I think that would be my number one improvement of TAP or whatever they're calling it today. I don't know if they're changing the name, but that would be the number one improvement. Get the command whose goal and mission, honorable may it be, is to keep experienced people in. And if you're going to be an experienced people, it's like, nah, I'm good. I'm going to head back to Kalamazoo, Michigan. It's a real place. I'm from there. It's just they shouldn't. What do you think about that? You can get canceled with me.
Yeah. So partially agree with you. The only reason why I say I don't is I've never liked bureaucracy telling me what to do, right? If I'm, hey, don't tell me how to do my job at the lowest level. Like, I understand the situation on the ground better. However, at scale, because we're talking at scale across services, I agree with you. And those senior leaders, you talk about Sergeant Major Gunny, Colonel, whoever, they've never transitioned in 99.9% of chances. And if they did, they came back in, if it's that one kind of percent. So they don't know what you're going through. And guess what? But they're going to be there someday. And then they're going to go, oh, crap. Or they'll be, you know, sucking once they're out, going, well, what am I going to do after the service? So I do believe there are some things Congress can do. And there's been some mandates. I know some of the services have changed. Like, hey, you can start doing this 12 months out, you have to attend these briefings. There are some things that happen, but if they really want to do it, they can say, hey, yeah, everyone gets to attend some type of transition thing, weeks, months long. The problem becomes manpower. And it, when you talk at a macro level of, you know, how many 200,000 service members get out every year, how many are in their 90-day window right now? I don't know. Fuzzy math, 70,000. That's a lot of bodies that are not getting backfilled. So down at the ground, I always think of, like, on my team, we could lose one person, who cares? But if you're manning a radar system and there's one person and you take that one person away, it could be mission critical. And that's where I think the command has to have some input. So where maybe it's a flag officer, general officer that has to, you know, you need their approval to deny some of these transition things, I think could be a help. But yeah, there's not a great answer to solve the problem.
Well, I think what you've illustrated is that the competing forces, one's advocating, I just don't want the one advocating for me to stay to be in charge of helping me leave. And a DOD employee that's a vet, I mean, they hire them to do lots and lots of things on bases. And I think a transition officer, I don't know if you call them that, a transition officer who has transitioned would on every base to be in charge of it, at least. Somebody, all these people can go to, even if you don't have the manpower to put one in or the usefulness of putting one in every command, because that would be weird and strange. But I do think a transition officer that's out would help.
I think that's good. And I also think it applies to anything where you're trying to do something different in the military. The amount of people that I talked to that were prior enlisted that then went to the Naval Academy, who said, yeah, my chief took my paperwork, hid my paperwork, said, you're not going, said, how dare you? You officers are stupid. You want to go do that? You want to go be one of the dumb ones? who, just because you're going down a different path. I think that applies to anything where you're trying to transition into any new thing. What was it like for you, Herb, to go from drill sergeant to Green Beret? Was that accepted?
It was accepted, but my raider at the time, my boss, was a Green Beret.
So, oh, there you go.
So it's a little different, but I know so many guys where they weren't accepted, or if they didn't get selected, their career was done, whether enlisted or officer. They went from being a hero, but like, oh, you want to go leave the unit? You don't want to be a part of the infantry anymore. You don't want to be a con mm-hmm. guy, whatever. You're going to be over here.
Yeah.
Go at it. And they had to struggle. So it is that whole being different, because the military is very good at making everyone the same. Like, it's an assembly line. Let's put people on it and you go down the path and that's how you go. And if you try to hop off it at any point, that's when crap goes sideways.
Yeah.
Because the drill gig is limited time anyway, right? It's you. So you're leaving within a couple of years, or how long?
Yeah, most people are drill sergeants for 2 years. Some people get a third year.
Okay. So that one was probably easier. Now, when you left, Southern New Hampshire University to go to Cornell, I don't know. Did they give you a hard time?
That's what I so weird, right? It's unique to the military. No, they didn't, right? Most places, it's a stepping stone to go somewhere, right? To go on further in your career. And definitely had great leaders that saw it that way. And I've been around leaders that don't see it that way. And they're only worried about their piece of the pie, because that's what's important to them. And that's their mission right now. And if they succeed, matters whoever's there, right? So it's a tough problem set. We're definitely making headway. One additional thing, once you see that the only resources, not all the resources are inside the walls of the base, inside the gate, there's a ton of nonprofits, resources out there that are willing to help that are awesome. There's some that are not good and they don't provide much service, but there's a ton out there. And once you realize, hey, this cell phone thing, I can talk to anybody in the world. I can reach out and find resources. Part of that is the motivation realizing I have to do that. Once a serviceman realizes, oh, I'm going to have to, whatever my plan is, whether it's to go to college, whether it's to go back home and run the family farm, or it's to go work in a factory, or to, hey, I want to make it to Silicon Valley. You can find a pathway. It just, it takes some work.
Wow. All right. So you have these books. They are available on Amazon.com. Super producer Holly is going to make sure that everyone knows how to get them. And you are in DC. I'm going to quote, he currently resides in his slice of heaven in the woods near Washington, D.C. So you're there doing your thing and spoiling your Labradoodle Liberty Bell.
Yeah,
he's got a Labradoodle named Liberty Bell.
She goes everywhere with me.
I love that. And I want to thank you. I'll thank you for your service, because that's what we do. And I want to thank you for your continued service to those who have served and are transitioning out, because that's an important part of the community, is taking care of people from, you know, enlistment to getting their VA marker. And I think every step along that way is super important. And we are going to remember this conversation. And I'm actually going to get this book in my post as a library, and I'm going to get this in there. I may mail it to you to get signed, because I'm cool like that. I'm cool like that. Like autographs. I'm in Hollywood. I love autographs. Nobody asked me for mine. It's weird. But we thank you so much for being here. Ashley Gudermuth thanks you. Holly, I'm waiting for her to nod, because I don't give thanks without their permission. Holly, thanks you for being here. And I'm sure the alphas out there are going to thank you for being here. We're going to talk to them without you. It's something we do.
Awesome.
But now that you've been here, you can be an alpha too, and you can get in on these little private chats. And we'll never kick you out. You're always welcome. So nice. we're gonna be back with you alphas when after the break.
The American Legion is raising awareness about PTSD and veteran suicide by offering hope, camaraderie, and support.
Be the one to help end veteran suicide.
The goal of the American Legion's Be the One campaign is to destigmatize asking for mental health support.
Be the one to ask a veteran in your life how they're doing.
Be the one who saves one veteran.
Go to BeTheOne.org and help the American Legion end veteran suicide.
Will you be the one?
All right, I hope you had a Coca-Cola on the break, and you're back with us here at the Tango Alpha Lima. New kind of experience for you. All right. Ashley 2.0, what's your takeaway here?
I love Herb, and I think that it's great that he just is continuing to serve others in the best way that he can. You know, he's highlighted how hard it is to transition out of the military. It's your whole life, and then it's suddenly you're not in the club anymore. How do we make sure that those people are okay and still feel like they're a part of it all, part of the club, stay in the club? I think that's what messes with a lot of people's heads.
And I do think that his perspective coming from, you know, coming from training people who just got it into the military all the way to leading people who are at the pinnacle of the military, where most people never get. So he has that holistic military experience perspective. And I think that's going to make a good book.
Yep. I think so. Let's check out his book, The Transition Mission, A Green Beret's Approach to Transition from Military Service.
Wow. You should do his book.
Memorized it.
Voiceover. What do you call that?
Yep. Book voiceover. Book? That's how I apply for them.
Yeah. You should do that. All right. if I hope I can stay here because there's multiple people in this document. All right, we are going to head on to rapid fire. No, we have to start this whole thing. Let's lock and load. We're going to go with rapid fire. All right, here's rapid fire number one. I did not include the link for some reason. So I would tell you the subject based off my reasonable memory. All right. This Taco Bell was created by a veteran. That's all I'm going to say. All right. Glenn Bell. Does that ring a bell? Glenn Bell didn't invent the taco. He didn't even invent the hard shell taco. What Bell did was recreate a taco recipe from a competing food stand and brought it to the rest of the United States. From that taco recipe in 1951, Glenn Bell started what would become Taco Bell in 1962. A child of the Great Depression, Bell picked up some culinary skills and a short business venture with his aunt while selling pies and other comfort foods to make extra cash. He joined the Marine Corps, hoorah, in 1943 and spent much of World War II cooking for high-ranking Army and Navy officers in the Solomon Islands. After the war, he went home to San Bernardino, California. In a 1999 biography, Bell said he worked with a chicken coop maker to create a unique fry basket out of chicken wire to form and fry the hard shells. In 1951, he added them to the menu at Bell's Burgers at a cost of just 19 cents. Oh. The second customer that day ordered a taco. He ruined his pinstripe suit and tie with the juices running down his sleeve before quickly ordering another. Finally ready to strike out on his own, Bell founded Taco Bell in Downey, California with just $4,000. Taco Bell grew faster than any of his previous chains. Within 2 years, he had 8 stores. It opened its first franchise in 1964 when Bell sold the company to PepsiCo. In 1978, there were 868 Taco Bells across the country.
Got to tell you, I did not expect the person that created Taco Bell to be named Glenn.
Well, okay.
Just didn't its resemblance that.
Its resemblance to actual Mexican food makes me think it probably should have been a person named Glenn.
Yeah, and it was. So I think you nailed it there. And it's interesting, isn't it? Worked. I mean, if you said now, somebody said to me, I made you this taco, and in order to deep fry it, I deep fried it in the metal of a chicken coop. I'd be like, that doesn't add seasoning.
No.
So.
Especially with a vegan taco. Is that going to be okay?
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Did they feed the chicken honey? Because that's a whole different.
No, that's. Yeah. All right. We're going to move on. I'm now feeling, you know, second breakfast. I need to go to Taco Bell.
Yeah.
All right. Here's something to get rid of my appetite in rapid fire number. Pew, pew, two. Deerfield American Legion 2023 Testicle Festival is March 18th. Deerfield, Michigan. Pure Michigan. An evening that attracts throngs of people from all areas all around Michigan and beyond to Deerfield comes back for its 22nd year. The Deerfield Testicle Festival, which is sponsored and hosted by Deerfield American Legion post number 392, is more than 2 decades old, and it doesn't stray away from promises of having a good time and having a ball.
What was my first question when I heard about this festival?
Where was, oh, you said human testicles?
I was confused. And it still doesn't even, is it from deer? Is it from bulls? Is this Rocky Mountain Oyster kind of situation?
Yeah.
Would you do it?
I think it's bull. What did you just ask me?
Would you do it?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not? Really? No.
I wouldn't even eat sushi. Are you kidding me?
I would do it. I would do it 7 times a day.
Yeah. Hey, next year, this is the annual event.
Okay. Invite me.
All right, Deerfield, Michigan, post number, where is it? 392 in Michigan. You have a guest that is willing and able on her highly popular Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, everywhere show. She will eat your fried testicles.
Yep.
On camera. All right. Yep. All right, we're going to go with my appetite now being gone. I now can talk about rapid fire number pew, 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 3. This is in the American Legion, legion.org from last year. It's a primer on intermittent fasting by my friend Jennifer Campbell. I'm only going to read the first paragraph. Intermittent fasting is growing in popularity. For those unfamiliar with the practice, intermittent fasting is when a person purposely fasts for most of the day and takes in calories only within a specific block of time. Typically, the fast lasts between 12 and 16 hours. That's now going to be no problem for me. Thank you, Deerfield, and your testicle event. I'm not going to eat for a while.
Hey, whatever works. I'm a faster. I intermittent fast.
Do you?
Yeah. Why not? Why not be angry?
What plan are you on?
It's just, you know, am I busy? that one. The most I've fasted, I think, is over 24 hours.
What?
Oh, yeah. When I was little, my dad wanted to teach me some very valuable lessons. He said, Ashley, you can go 3 days without water. You can go 72 without food. And I've taken that into adulthood.
All right. Any shout outs? I don't actually have one.
I guess just shout out to my dad for poor parenting. I got no other shout out.
Well, he helped shape who you are today. So why don't you take us home?
All right, everybody. Hey, don't forget. I know that sometimes it's hard. Don't forget to subscribe to the Tango Alpha Lima podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts. I don't know where you're looking. Please leave us a review and give us a big old 5-star rating. Otherwise, I'm going to make you cut my grass and you're not going to like it. So the world knows how much you love us. If you have a guest recommendation, go to legion.org/Tango Alpha Lima and click on the suggested guest link. Please let us know who you want to talk to. Send us interesting people. That's who we want. And we want them to bear their souls.
All right. That was very lovely. All right, alphas. I know you're out there. And you know what? I love all of you. And I love that you are constantly thriving for alpha level excellence. If you can convince more of the people around you to get up to that task, I would appreciate that. And I think Herb might help us. Herb might help us with his drill instructor and his special forces, moxie. He might get us all to be more alpha. So with that, I'm gonna send you out on your mission to find betas and charlies and deltas and promote them all the way to the top of the alpha food chain. See it? The theme of today's, yeah, the food chain. And until I see you again, I'm going to declare this, season 4, episode 153, mission complete.